We have lots and lots of questions. Job had questions. I'm going to put this down. Job had questions of God about why things turned out in his life as they did. An English writer and dramatist by the name of Rob Lacey once upon a time put on a one-man show summarizing the gospel of Jesus, and then kind of got caught up in things and began to put the whole biblical story together in his own words. This is how he tells the story of Job. Job says, "Right now I'm bitter, okay? I'm groaning, but God's hand is still grinding me down. If only I had a map saying God is here and a big arrow pointing. If only I knew where God lived, I'd break in, I'd argue my case, reason with God. But if I go into the city, God's not there. If I go out to the suburbs, God's not there. Rumors of God out in the country, but I miss God. Up, down, over, across, God's not for finding. I've looked, and I don't need reminding. As sure as God lives, even though God's denied me all my rights, and as long as I've got breath in my lungs, I'm not going to lose it and loose words without use. I won't suddenly spew words with no view. Bitterness won't get through, not am I going to admit to you that you're right? I'll die before I plead guilty. Watch me." Then God answers Job from the center of a whirlwind. "Who do you think you are? How come you talk so much when you know so little? Brace yourself, I've got some questions of my own. Where were you when I created all of this? If you're so clever, tell me about it. Were you the guy who drew up all the plans, who totted up all the costs? Was it you or someone else, huh? Tell me about the foundations. Who laid down the million tons of rock? It was you, wasn't it? Or was it someone else? Don't you remember when the stars formed a chorus and the angels screamed like pop star groupies? Have you ever told the sun, 'Okay, it's time to rise'? Have you got a map to get you to the place where light lives? And where does darkness hang out? Can you tell the stars where to go? Can you drag the bear by its lead and tie it to the plow? Do you know the rules that run all this?" God says to Job, "You asked me some tough questions. Well, when's your answer to my questions?" Job answers, "I'm an idiot. How can I answer back to God? I'm nothing and I know nothing. I'll shut my mouth." But God carries on from inside the whirlwind. "Brace yourself. I'll ask and you answer if you can. Do you really have the nerve to slag off my sense of justice? Could you arm wrestle me and win? Could you beat me in a shouting match?" Job speaks again. "I know you can do anything and everything you like. When you like, how you like. And when you do, nobody dares get in your way. You asked me, 'Who is this that questions me?' I had no idea what I was talking about. It was all way too big for me to get my head around. I can't believe I had the nerve to say to you, 'Listen to me when I'm talking. I ask the questions and you give the answers.' I'd heard rumors of your reputation. Now I've seen you with my own eyes, and it changes everything. For all of our questions, good questions, essential questions, urgent questions, for all of them, I believe it is not answers that we ultimately seek, as important as those answers may seem. It is not the answers we seek so much as it is an audience, a hearing, an encounter, a relationship, not just a knowing and hearing about God, but knowing God personally. In the words of Job, I had heard about you, and now I have seen you face to face, and that changes everything. Did you catch the story a couple of weeks ago about the college athlete nearing the end of her life, doing everything she could to do what she loves best, which is playing basketball? Lauren Hill is her name, and a year ago at this time, when she turned 18, the only thing she wanted for her birthday was to sign a scholarship to be able to play college basketball. But shortly after she did that, she learned that she had an inoperable and terminal brain tumor. Even so, basketball has been her life, and it continues to be her life. The original prognosis from the doctors gave her 2 years to live, but the tumor has grown faster than expected, and now she expects to be dead by New Year's Day. Still, her dream of playing college basketball hasn't died. And so 2 weeks ago, the NCAA did the unheard of thing and broke their own rules to let her and her team play an early game 2 weeks before the start of the official basketball season. So far, she looks like any other student athlete, doesn't she? Enjoying her place on the court, but somehow we begin to recognize that she's just a little bit different, with extra sensitivity because of the tumor and needing to protect herself as much as possible. And in a game where not only she, but her friends, family, teammates, the other team, all rallied around her for her special day. But let's hear the story for itself.
Finally tonight, every basketball player is up against the clock, but none more so than the brave young woman our Steve Hartman and thousands of others watched in action today.
Lauren Hill and her Mount St. Joe Lions.
A few hours ago, here in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Mount St. Joseph University women's basketball team took to the floor in their season opener. All eyes on a starting forward who may just be the most devoted player this game has ever seen.
Number 22, Lauren Hill!
19-year-old freshman Lauren Hill was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer about a year ago. And from that moment to this, her main goal has been to play in just one college basketball game.
I wanted to wear those shoes and wear that jersey and feel like a superhero again, because that's what I feel when I put on the jersey and that number.
For weeks, Lauren has been waiting for and working for that first game. Since practice began last month, she's been training with her team, getting up at 5:30 a.m., fighting back unimaginable headaches in utter defiance of her cancer.
When I'm not there, I feel like I'm letting people down.
Lauren has weeks to live at best, and here she is worried about letting other people down.
Why does that matter so much to you?
Because I love them. They're like my family. And they keep me going. They're what makes me positive.
But it took more than will to get Lauren to this moment. Because time was so short, the NCAA allowed Mount St. Joseph to move their season opener up 2 weeks. They also had to change the venue to accommodate all the people who wanted to support Lauren. This arena seats 10,000, and it's sold out.
Just checking into the game was accomplishment enough, but Coach Dan Benjamin didn't want to stop there. He had a special play design. If Mount St. Joe got the tip, they would try to double down on Lauren's dream. And as fate would have it, they got the tip.
And Lauren sets high. The screen comes. The ball goes down to Lauren Hill. And the layup is good. A layup for Lauren.
And with that, Lauren Hill checked out of the game. Perfect from the field. And a perfect example for any athlete who wants to go out on top.
Today's been the best day I've ever had.
Steve Hartman, CBS News, in Cincinnati.
One of the things that Lauren said in an interview is that she used to ask the question, why? Why me? Why is my life to end so suddenly and swiftly? But she said she's learned to stop asking that question because she's come to understand that in this world, stuff happens. Stuff happens. No other words you could use, but stuff happens. And sometimes there are no answers. The only thing that matters is what we do with our life, regardless. Lauren's story is a powerful reminder for me that stewardship is not just about what we do with our money and what we do to support our church and its ministry. It's what we do with our whole life, all of it. Yes, stewardship is about how we use our money, how we use our time, how we use our talents, but much more fundamentally, it's about what we do with the life, every part of it, that God has given to us. While I was working on last week's sermon, I don't know that I should confess this, but I opened my Bible to the wrong page. Anybody ever had that happen? You go looking for something and you end up somewhere else. Well, I was working on last week's sermon and looking for 2 Corinthians 4. And I turned to 1 Corinthians 4 instead. The 2 Corinthians 4 would be a wonderful pairing with Job because it talks about Paul's own experience of hardship in life and how, in spite of that, nothing has beat him down totally. But I found something much more amazing in 1 Corinthians 4, where Paul describes himself as a servant of Christ and steward of God's mysteries. You and I can talk about stewardship all day long. Stewardship of the environment, stewardship of our money and possessions, stewardship of our gifts and abilities, stewardship of relationships, stewardship of time, stewardship of hope, stewardship of the past and our heritage, but none of these come close to imagining ourselves simply as this stewards of God's mysteries. That's the true treasure. And it's the true treasure of this congregation. Not the building and this sanctuary and its stained glass windows, not our endowments and other tangible assets, not our storied past and honored dead and favorite pastors, but our stewarding of eternity and our stewarding of the gospel and our stewarding of God's mysteries. What are those mysteries? Simply this: that God's in love with us and the whole world, and it's been that way right from the beginning. And that no matter what we do, God always loves us and wants the best for us and wants us to understand that. That the entire biblical story and salvation history from Genesis to Revelation is aimed at bringing us into harmony with God, harmony with nature, harmony with one another. That the fullness and embodiment of God's love is found in a simple man from Galilee named Jesus. And that God has chosen us and entrusted us to be Christ's ambassadors, agents, and ministers of reconciliation and hope until all the world dwells in peace and unity. If we get that right, none of the other stuff matters. None of our huffing and puffing about the travails of our life, none of our huffing and puffing about what might become of this church and the other churches in the city, if we get that stewarding of God's mysteries right, none of that other stuff matters. And guess what? If we don't get it right, none of that other stuff matters. Above all else, we are stewards of God's mysteries, stewards of God's grace, stewards of God's love, stewards of God's mercy, stewards of God's forgiveness. Who are we? Stewards of God's mysteries. But what does that look like in action? Two quick examples. Recently, I heard of a church in Chicago. It's a struggling little church, a church that's $50,000 in debt. And then one day they received notice that a real estate investment they made a number of years back to provide multi-ethnic, multi-income housing in part of a troubled neighborhood in Chicago, that building had been sold, and they had a check for $1.6 million on their way. What would a church, especially an urban church, in debt, do with $1.6 million? Here's what they did. They divided the money into two parts. A big part that they're going to pray about and figure out together as a congregation what to do. But they started with a tithe. They took 10% of that 1.6 and began writing checks. If you haven't heard the story, hang on to your seatbelts. Because they didn't write checks to other organizations. They wrote checks to the members of the church. Every active member in the church and every active churchgoer, whether they were formally on the membership rolls or not, received a check for $500. No strings attached. They could use that money any way they wanted, with simply this request, that it be used to do good in the world. Three instructions came with the check. First, spend time praying about what it is that God wants you to do with this gift. Secondly, do it. Get it done before December, when the check expires. Thirdly, when you've acted, tell other people what you've done. And that tiny little congregation found themselves waking up in new ways, beginning to have new conversations with one another. Rather than individuals deciding just for themselves, they began to pair their checks so they could do greater good, perhaps starting an Ebola clinic in Africa. Or the woman who saw herself as paying off some upcoming wedding debt, instead choosing to invest it in the lives of homeless gay youth in the city of Chicago. We jump to Brooklyn, and back to Brooklyn, and out of Brooklyn, and back to Brooklyn, just to make sure you're paying attention. A church building that was in such disrepair that the tiny congregation several years ago no longer could afford to keep it up and sold the building. Today, they share space with a Lutheran church down the block. Recently, they took out a half-page ad in the New York Times. I don't even want to know what a half-page ad in the New York Times costs. But they took out a half-page ad in the New York Times complaining about how our economists have failed us as a public. You know how it is. The economists on the left argue with the economists on the right. They're absolutely right in their belief, and they're absolutely right in their belief, and we don't know what to make of any of it. And that congregation decided that they would set up a prize of $33,000 taken from the remaining proceeds from their old building, and they would award it to someone who could step forward and say, why is it that the American economy is in worse shape today than it was in post-World War II America, especially in terms of the income disparity? They're not looking for ideology. They're not looking for politics. They want answers that can become a gift and a blessing, a new starting point for all of us. I read those stories, and the imp in me wonders what would happen if our churches here in the city of Syracuse laid our weapons down and started praying and thinking and acting in ways in which we could carry out the stewarding of God's mysteries by simultaneously caring for and stewarding the common good around us. You know what I'm talking about. You know what it means for this congregation every year at this time to begin to put together Thanksgiving bags for folks who would perhaps never have a Thanksgiving meal otherwise. And for this congregation to join other good folks all over this community, rustling up winter coats and hats and gloves for those who have none but spend almost all of their day outdoors. And what it would mean for us as a congregation to understand our stewarding of God's mysteries and of the common good to stretch beyond our slice of the world into all the world, perhaps starting with the gift of music. And just as we enjoyed Elisa Ciccioli at the end of September, she'll be back 2 weeks from today to lead us as a congregation in exploring more about how to bring the gifts of the world's music into our life as a congregation. Who are we? Simply this: stewards of God's mysteries for the sake of the common good. And if you want a place to start, you can do so this afternoon at 3:00 when communities of faith from all over this community will gather at Living Water Church of Christ on the south side and begin to say, how is it that we will pull together and work together and act together and pray together and love together, not just for our own sake, but for the well-being of this entire city? I'll be there. if you go, your vote will count as well. Amen.